Our next guest is Surawardi Gebel from the Secretary General of the Sufi Order International, which has space on Mount Lebanon, part of the Mount Lebanon Shaker Village, which it shares with Darrow School, and the Shaker Museum is about to move over there from Chatham. The Sufis are probably best known by the poet Rumi. So to lead this off, I'm going to read a short poem. A craftsman pulled a reed from the reed bed, cut holes in it, and called it a human being. Since then, it's been wailing a tender agony of parting, never mentioning the skill that gave it life as a flute. Welcome, Surawardi.
Thank you, Richard, and thank you, Anne, for having me on this program.
First, why don't you tell us a little bit about the Abode of the Message.
Okay. I just wanted to make a quick comment about Rumi's poem. He talks about the cries of humanity, and we see part of our work as bringing awareness to the way that the cries of humanity, as our teacher put it, rise up like a mist and condense and fall back as the rain of the message. The message of hope and inspiration. So to say something about the Abode of the Message, this was first established in 1975 at a time when there were many communes being formed around the country. It was a time of the hippies, and Abode was no exception. And I think over the years it has matured, and it's out-survived many of the communes of that time. It's recently celebrated its 35th anniversary as a community.
And it's been a residential community all that
time. That's right. It's a residential community. The chief activity there, the chief way of earning a living, there is a programs office, which is a conference center, and we have programs at the Abode all through the year. Various groups come in. We have some of our own programs. We have an organic farm there with fresh veggies, and a wonderful cook produces a lot of variety in her meals.
These vegetables are produced for your own use?
Yes. They're used for the programs, they're used for the community, they're used for the camp that will be coming up, annual events that we have there. There's also an elementary school there called the Mountain Road School.
And that's open to anyone who wants to enroll their kids?
Yes. A few of the community members have kids and they go there, but many of the people there are from the surrounding area.
I see. How many students do you have?
I'd have to guess maybe 40 or so. Huh? Different grades up to... I think they're up to fifth or sixth grade.
How's the school funded?
Through the tuition, so it's not cheap.
Mm-hmm. Now, what is the summer gathering?
Well, once a year we have a gathering for the Sufi Order International. And Sufi Order International, first I should say that the Abode is the headquarters, the international headquarters of the Sufi Order International, which has centers all around this country, about 50 centers in North America, and more than 50 centers in Europe, and then additional centers in Pakistan, Turkey, Indonesia, Australia, New Zealand, Canada.
And the Sufi Order, Sufism in general, is a kind of mystical school of Islam, I believe.
It's a mystical school. Yes, it was developed in the culture of Islam, but there are a number of Sufi orders which see themselves as universal. And so our members, the members of the Sufi order, are from many different religions. In fact, majority, I would say, are Christian and Jewish, and the number of Muslim members are smaller. We have at the Abode, we have every week a worship service that honors all the major world religions. That's one of the things that drew me to the Sufi order, is that universal perspective. So the summer gathering is an opportunity first for our community from around the country, and sometimes even from greater distances. I know regularly someone comes from Chile to the camps. It's an opportunity for our community to gather, see each other year after year as old friends. It's an opportunity to have a silent retreat with our peer. A peer is literally means old man, although in this case our peer has just turned 40. He's not an old man. He's the leader, the head of the Sufi order, and a very inspiring being. So it's an opportunity to spend time with him. And in this year, we've decided to take a little different approach than we have in past years. We are going to be addressing one of the cries of humanity of today, which is to consider the consequences of the ecological challenge that we're facing in the world. And what does a spiritual group have to say about it? What can we do about it? You know, it's something that I think is on many people's minds, but perhaps there's not that much opportunity to talk about it, go into it deeply, share feelings about it, concern. So there'll be opportunity for our community and anyone who wishes to join us and feels called to this to go into this deeply, to air our feelings and our concerns, and to consider what does a spiritual community have to do about this.
Now you're talking specifically about global warming and the ecological crisis.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a great subject. So what's the answer? What can a spiritual community do about it?
Well, you know, the humanity has faced many big crises in the past, and in some ways this is unprecedented, but every time humanity has faced a big crisis, it has been an opportunity for some big change, an opportunity for growth. Pier Zia, who's the head of our organization, has been speaking in the past year about the coming global civilization. This has been spearheaded by the global economy, but he thinks perhaps we shouldn't let the economy define what the global civilization is going to be. So he's been drawing together people from many different disciplines and different spiritual groups and religious groups to try to establish a school of wisdom. It's not something new. It's something that has existed in the past and at various times in the past, where intellectuals, artists, spiritual evolved people have come together and have kind of stimulated each other and asked the questions about, you know, how can we develop our culture, our civilization, based on wisdom. So this crisis that's coming, it's an opportunity as well as a challenge. One could take a very gloomy view of it and say that there's not much we can do, you know, that everything, all the forces are already in place to change things irrevocably, and that's probably true. But there is a lot that we can do. And that's our challenge, is to consult our intuition, our own wisdom, to come together as a group and share that wisdom and perhaps join with others who are like-minded people and see what we can do. I'm sure there's something we can do.
Now, do you do this by way of workshops or general communion between people, or how does that all work?
Yeah, well, yes to both. We're going to devote the first day to discussions in various forms, and not just discussions, because that could get boring if we're just talk and talk. So we're also going to be doing some dancing and singing and some meditation, some different ways of discussion, like in small groups and in large groups. Then we'll have, on some of the other days, we'll have something in more of a workshop format, where there'll be some sharing of our teachings and some participatory interaction with the teachers. So, yeah, a variety of ways of approaching this.
So, how is Sufi growing? Is it sort of, how has it evolved since the 70s? Is it gaining members, or has it plateaued, or where's it at in its whole learning curve?
Well, just speaking about the Sufi order, because there are many Sufi groups now in this country, in the 70s, Pir Vilayat, who is the father of the Pir now, was attracting a lot of people. He was traveling continually, giving seminars in city after city, and many people were attracted then. And so we have actually an aging population that is still there from back from the 70s. That's when I joined in the early 70s. And Pir Vilayat was still going strong in the 90s. In 2004, he passed away. He had cancer. And there was a kind of transition time when his son, Pirzia, was not very well known and beginning to become known. And maybe some of the people that Pir Vilayat attracted were drifting away. So Pirzia has been very successful in bringing back some of those people who drifted away. And now he's drawing many younger people. So I would say we're now coming out of that dip that happened during the transition and beginning to grow again.
Your Sunday gatherings are open to everyone, I think, right?
The Sunday worship services, yes. Every Sunday at 10:15, we have a service at the abode. We light candles to each of the major world religions. We read from their scriptures, and usually there's some dancing and some singing. There's a theme which is sounded through all of the scripture readings. So the idea of the universal worship is that when one hears from all of the religions at one time in a single place, each one sounds a particular note. And when you hear all these notes sounded, you begin to recognize the symphony that's underlying all the notes.
One of my favorite books is The Perennial Philosophy by Aldous Huxley. I suppose you know it, mm-hmm. which combines all those religious traditions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The summer gathering, is that open also to, how would you say, day trippers? I mean, do you have to be staying at the camp in order to participate?
Well, I would say for the silent retreat, it's not a good idea to just come for one day. The silent retreat is 2.5 days, and I would advise anyone who wants to come to that to come to the whole thing. For the other camp, it's better if you can come for the camp, but it's possible to come to be a day tripper. Yeah.
Can you explain what the silent retreat is for someone that doesn't know?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Pir Vilayat described the retreat in terms of an alchemical image. So the beginning of the retreat is a purification process. So you're removing from the ore of the human being, the kind of crude ore, the essence, the pure gold that's in it. So there are practices that first expand your consciousness, take you out of your daily beta state of alertness and active state into a more contemplative state. And then there's a second stage where you're lifting your consciousness. You're thinking about your what inspires you, your own ideal, and holding that before you and allowing it to lift up your consciousness. And the third stage is going within and finding inside that there's a whole inner world that one doesn't notice so much because one's attention is so attracted by the outer world. And so that is the depth of the retreat in the third stage. That's the middle.
Is that a self-guided tour? I mean, people say silent for the weekend. Is that so? Mm-hmm. They go through those different stages by themselves, or there's sort of a teacher or guide to bring them through that?
Yes, there is a teacher. In the morning, we have all day we have guided sessions where Pirzia would be guiding some of those sessions, and Aziza Scott, who is a world traveler. Teacher of retreats, she trains retreat guides, and offers retreats around the world. She'll be the other one leading the retreat. So there are group sessions where we all come together and meditate together, and then there are times in between the group sessions where you can go off and do the practices on your own. So just to finish the cycle, you go to the depth of the retreat where. Your sense of separateness and individuality is merging into a sense of unity with nature, unity with all beings, into the deep state of consciousness, which is experienced as oneness. Then after that begins the return back to life. So in the fourth stage, there's the merging of the energies of heaven and earth. So in the deep state, you're in touch with heavenly energies, pure states. And in the fourth state, you're bringing a marriage between that heavenly energy and everyday life, earthly experience. Bringing that back into life. And in the fifth stage, you're annealing, you're hardening your experience of the retreat, because when you go into that center of the retreat, it's a very vulnerable state. You're very open and sensitive. So in order to keep that, to protect that sensitive state that you've experienced, and in the midst of life, you have to strengthen yourself to come back. So there's practices to affirm and call on one's inner power. And then the final stage is called the materialization of spirit and the spiritualization of matter. So it's re-entering life with a spiritual point of view, being back in the world with your feet firmly planted in the ground, but your head in the clouds still.
I had a friend, I think it was 1994, that went through one of these silent retreats in, I think, Western Massachusetts somewhere, not your place, but I think he did a week-long quiet. And he said at the end, we both lived in Florida at the time, and he was driving back to Florida on the New Jersey Turnpike afterwards, and traffic was like dead to a stop, so there was fumes, people honking. It was the traffic letting out of, I think it was Woodstock 2 or something, where there was a mini riot. So there were probably drunk people on the road too. And so it was kind of the most stressful kind of situation you could possibly be in. But he said he didn't care at this point. He was so blissed out that that mm-hmm. none of that all bothered him at that point. So that's kind of the results of the silent retreat could for some people, I guess.
Yes. Well, I think for many people that's possible, that you can find a kind of inner calmness that maybe you weren't in touch with before, that it does persist, especially if you take many retreats. It develops.
Yes, I was just having a little mini meditation there while you were speaking.
Good.
I
went, "Oh." Okay, well, come and join us, and then you can extend that.
Now, for more information, people can go to the website, which is
www.sufiorder.org. So Sufiorder, S-U-F-I-O-R-D-E-R.
And is there anything else you'd like to say?
Yes. You know, what I've been describing, it might sound very serious, but we also have a lot of fun. There's a lot of joy in our camps. We have also a children's camp for those who want to bring their children. And it's not just daycare, but you know, children are doing very creative things. Also, we have a very experienced and talented person who's leading that children's camp.
How many people do you normally expect?
Well, we actually have two camps going on the first four days. One is this community camp that we've been talking about, then we also have a leaders camp, and together 100 to 120 people. And then the retreat is a similar number usually.
Well, Suravarti, thank you very much for coming in today.
Okay, you're very welcome. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.